telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame.
What is up, Wisconsin?
Quiets. It's good to be back in our home state. Big week last week. Civic was, of course, down at the DNC in Chicago. It was a busy week, suffice it to say. Incredibly exciting. I think exceeded all possible expectations. I haven't yet been with you following Vice President Kamala Harris's nomination acceptance speech, but boy, was that a treat. I mean, Brian, people in the athletic business talk about putting on a clinic. Yeah, that was a clinic on how to be a professional speaker. I couldn't find one thing to frankly critique in her speech from a pure political oratory perspective. I thought that was damn near perfect. What did you think, Brian?
Yeah, she did a pretty darn good job. They people were just really excited about seeing her. She was the main event. At that point, she could have probably said, do you know what? I like bologna, and I put ketchup on my bologna sandwiches, and that's delicious. And the way that she would have said it would have probably been the greatest thing, and everyone has said, yes, bologna sandwiches for everyone. But on top of that, she showed up and gave a really good speech, which was hit it out of the park. I mean, it was basically like, hey, the bases are loaded. We're probably going to win, but do your best. And she hits a grand slam. So good for her.
I love the mixed metaphors there, Brian. Exactly what we had going on. Yeah. And we've got certainly an incredible show for all of you right after the convention. We got to kick it off, right? We got, what is it? Somewhere in the ballpark of 70 days now? 70 something?
70 days. 71 days.
70 days until the election. So there is going to continue to be tons to talk about. We are kicking off today a really special segment that'll be part of my show for the foreseeable future, certainly up until the election. It is Maggie and the Millionaires. Every day I'm going to have a special guest, and we're going to talk to you about money. Money in our country, money in politics, money in our pocketbooks, money in rich people's pocketbooks, the tax system, all of these things. Why, you may be asking, Maggie, would you spend so much time every day talking about something which can be perhaps a little unsexy, maybe a little dry? We'll keep it very punchy for all of you. But the reason that we're doing this is that we live in a capitalistic democracy, and there can be no debate that understanding how money frankly flows through our economy, what values does our tax system express, how does a particular policy either help or hurt the middle class, what does all of this mean? Because all of us, at the end of the day, know that it is typically about the money. And so following the money and trying to get a handle on how this all works and what you should know to be the most prepared voter you can be come November 6th is incredibly important. And the reality is this: there are sharp, sharp distinctions in the economic policies being proposed by the Harris-Biden administration, excuse me, the Harris-Walz ticket. There are sharp differences with the Biden-Harris administration's economic policies, and there are sharp differences between those two and the sorts of policies Trump put into place during his first term and then he's proposing for his second term. And they will make a difference in your family's economic health. So really important. And frankly, let's be honest, sometimes the candidates don't make it as clear as they should be what those differences are. You know, Trump talks about, yes, he put in place a tax cut. And most of us, if we hear the words tax cut and are asked, is that a good or a bad thing? Most of us would probably say, well, lower taxes generally are better. So yay, because we don't want to pay any more taxes than we have to. But the question isn't about should there be a tax cut. The question should always be, who is the tax cut benefiting and what sort of programs? Where do we have to take something out of the budget to make up for the fact that we're giving a tax cut? That's where the rubber meets the road. That is one element that we are going to be digging into today.
The first thing that I was asked when I got back, and I'm on a boat yesterday with the family. First thing I was asked was, that was a great bunch of speeches. That was a bunch of fun. Who's paying for it? That was the first question I was asked.
Who's paying for the convention?
No. Who's paying for all the wonderful things we all talked about last week? All this wonderful hope and change, all these great ideas. Who's paying for it? Which brings back to the point of, you know, why we're going to talk about this. Money matters. And the thing that they cared about is, that's great. That's all this hope and stuff. We guys should do all these things. Who's paying for it? And that's where the rubber meets the road. And by the way, money is very sexy. Nothing makes somebody who's really ugly a lot hotter than having a bunch of money around them. At least I've seen that a lot. So money is very sexy, by the way.
Yeah, the Amex Black Card certainly ups your hotness rating.
It's sure a lot better than any scent that's out there.
Yes, the scent of money, the ultimate aphrodisiac. Yeah, Brian, you're right. Here's the thing, just on that very question, I often hear that from people. And the whole point is, we're spending a whole lot of money all the time. Where does it come from? It comes from taxpayers and corporations, right? Those that generate revenue for the federal government. That is our tax system. So the way that we pay things is, we all pay for them. The question isn't, how is it getting paid for? Because the answer is always the same: taxpayers. The question is not, how are we paying for it or who is paying for it, but how is the burden to pay for these things divvied up amongst working people and those that do not work anymore because they're so stinking wealthy, they can just live off their investments? That's the question. And that fundamentally is a moral judgment, right? Do we believe that work is as valuable and perhaps more valuable than those who don't work and simply let their money feed their lifestyle, right? We all rely on our paychecks to do what we want and be on a boat and do all those great things. But there's a whole lot of people that don't pay anything out of a paycheck because they don't get paychecks anymore. So this week, generally speaking, we're going to be talking about what makes America the richest country in the world. Well, who really are we talking about when we say that, right? Because regular folks all the time ask me, well, the GDP is going up, but it's not helping me any. And this has to get beyond talking points from either the right or the left. Oh, well, if you raise taxes, businesses leave. Well, some businesses might. But the question is, does the differential that is made from an increase in corporate tax rates or maintaining corporate tax rates, is that revenue increase, is it justified by the policies and programs that we can pay for because of that? Is that increase or maintaining a corporate tax rate, is that offset by, for example, job growth because we're able to invest in other industries? It is far more complicated than observing that maybe some businesses might move if tax rates go up. The fact of the matter that the businesses that got the benefit of the Trump tax cut in 2017 were paying 35% and they were still here. So an argument that somehow putting their tax rates back to 35% would lead to some mass exodus of businesses from this country is suspicious on its face. We, especially here in Wisconsin, have some of the most skilled workers in North America. We are a destination for businesses. And they were here back when the rate was 35% on a federal level. They'll be here afterwards. Again, don't believe all the hype. We got to get under it. So I'm really excited to have Stephen Prince, the vice chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, joining me this afternoon at 3:00. He founded National Business Products, now known as Card Market, as a gift card and in-store marketing material production company. He came up, he is the quintessential bootstrap guy. He was not born wealthy. He wasn't even really born upper middle class. He was born working class. He created his own business. He's now vice chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. We're going to talk about money today. What is rich, right? What is rich in the United States? Because again, when we start calling things like estate taxes, death taxes, it certainly sounds scary to people who won't have estates when they die, but definitely will all be dying. So those kinds of things. What does it mean to be rich and rich in America? We'll talk about all of that today. That is going to be a daily segment here on the Maggie Dawn Show, 3 p.m. every day. By the time we hit November 6th, people, if you tune in on the regular at 3 p.m., you will probably know more about economic policy than basically almost all of the Republicans running on the congressional tickets in the state of Wisconsin. I promise you, that's what we're going to get done for you. Really excited about it. But Brian, I wanted to start today off with some of the kind of insane things that we were hearing from Republicans just melting down. There's no other word for it, melting down during the DNC. And folks on this network and others have talked about the right's reaction to different moments of joy and unity during the DNC. And one of their special targets really got their blood boiling was the effusiveness, the love and exuberance of Gus Walz, Governor Tim Walz's son, who had a moment of just, again, pure joy during his dad's speech, was moved to tears and stood up and said, "That's my dad." And anybody who saw it, it would do nothing but melt your heart. Oh, of course, if your heart is turned into a lump of coal because your name is Laura Ingraham or Jay Weber. We'll talk about that and some other really nasty things that Republicans have said after we come back. Then Brian and I will share with you some of our favorite guests and moments from the DNC. You're not going to want to miss all of it. I want to hear from you. What were your favorite moments, favorite guests? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Stay put, everybody. We'll be back after these important messages.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Well, you haven't got the knack of being idly rich, you see. You should do like me, just snooze and dream, dream and snooze. The pleasures are unlimited.
I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. Yeah, when the rain, do you remember how sweet it used to be?
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. And whatever your party or no party at all, you need to be a voter in 2024. Tuesday, September 17th is National Voter Registration Day. So if you're not registered, maybe that's a good day to mark on your calendar as a reminder to get registered. Plus, it's a really good reminder to check your registration and make sure it is up to date. Have you moved? Maybe you got married. Maybe you changed your name. Is all of that up to date? You don't want to get to the polls on November 6th and be locked out of voting. You can always go to myvote.wi.gov. That's myvote.wi.gov to check your status. Again, I think I just said November 6th. General election is Tuesday, November 5th. And if you need additional information, Civic Media has you covered. Head over to civicmedia.us/vote, civicmedia.us/vote, and you will learn more about all of the relevant deadlines, early voting, all that good stuff. Because everyone needs to have their voice heard in this such a historic election. We certainly heard from some conservative voices during the DNC. Apoplectic, I mean, Trump's meltdown on Truth Social was sort of epic and typically nonsensical. So I think it's really important to check out a couple of the truly eyebrow-raising things that they had to say. Now, keep in mind, during the DNC, the Harris-Walz ticket raised $82 million. That is, I believe, a record. They have raised over $540 million in the month since Harris announced her campaign for the presidency. So, yeah, you would expect Republicans to be a wee bit in the freakout mode, I would say. So it was unsurprising to me that Republicans took what I think by any human measure was the most heartwarming, wholesome moment of the entire convention when Gus Walls got up and was showing his love for his dad, giving the speech of his life. It was really a beautiful thing. Of course, not so beautiful for Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham. I think I said it was Laura Ingraham before, wasn't it? It was Ann Coulter.
It was Ann Coulter and Jay Weber.
Jay Weber.
Good old ISN's Jay Weber.
Yeah. Ann Coulter, conservative commentator. I could say many things about Ann Coulter. I won't because the personal attacks really aren't relevant, but she has her own sort of messy personal life. Everyone, I think, at points in time does have a bit of a mess in their personal life. So I think, you know, it's one of those things that you would hope a commentator lays off of at least the kids of candidates. And if not the kids of candidates writ large, at least the kids of candidates who have nonverbal learning disorders and ADHD. And if not the kids of candidates with nonverbal learning disorders with ADHD, maybe the kids of candidates with nonverbal learning disorders not coming out and making some overt political speech that attacks your chosen candidate. Just a kid standing up and cheering for his dad. That merits Republican derision and disrespect and attacks, apparently, to Ann Coulter and WISN's rock star, like marquee commentator Jay Weber. It certainly did. Ann Coulter, minutes after Gus Walls got up during his dad's speech to cheer on his dad, tweeted out, "Weird. Ann, why is showing love for your dad weird? Why is it? He's crying. He's having a good time. He's so excited. Why is that weird? Why is it weird for a child to express that? Why is it weird for a 17-year-old boy to be brought to tears by his dad's impassioned vice presidential acceptance speech? What's weird is that you think it's weird. This is why people call you weird, right? Like, what is going on?
And I'm no Republican operative, but there's got to be someone in there that says, hey, maybe if you go and say that this is a beautiful moment and show that you can say that this is good too, maybe people will say, oh, they're not all weird and crazy and jerks. But literally every single one of them can't even accept. They can't even accept just a joyous, pure joyous thing and call it pure joy. They have to say something mean about it. Like, J.D. Vance can't go into a store. He failed the cheesesteak test. He can't just go in and say, hey, look, this cheesesteak is delicious. He goes, do you have any Swiss?
Why isn't there Swiss?
Like, who says that? Like, do you have any horrible food here at this grocery store so I can give it to the journalists? No, you just say, hey, look, I'm in a grocery store eating local food. See you, bye. I'm a good person. Bye. Have a good day.
Can't do that. Cannot do it. Jay Weber, I mean, this is the text of texts. I'm not going to use the semi-expletive that he uses. This is Jay Weber, WISN headline famous, one of their brand defining commentators on WISN, wrote this. Sorry, and this is, again, he's referencing Gus Walz's wholesome, exuberant outburst of love and joy for his dad. Sorry, but this is embarrassing for both father and son. If the Walzes represent today's American man, this country is screwed. And he acts like he is Tim Walls introducing his son. Quote, meet my son, Gus. He's a blubbering blank boy. His mother and I are very proud. End quote. Gross. Weird, gross, disgusting, unfair, unkind, cruel, unnecessary, and beside the point. But what's not beside the point is your cruelty, is the lack of humanity, which you choose not to show to anyone who disagrees with you, right? Like, that you think that people who disagree with you are not owed a modicum of acknowledgement of their human dignity, a modicum of respect, is what is weird. It is what is unacceptable with the entire MAGA platform these days. It's fine if you want to argue for your policies. It's fine if we want to have great political arguments. But your cruelty is not acceptable. And it wasn't just Ann Coulter, and it wasn't just Jay Weber. The cruelty parade from the MAGA cult continued all last week. We'll hit two local people in addition to Jay Weber, who said other disgusting, ridiculous, frankly, cruel things. When we come back, I want to hear what your favorite moments, most shocking moments, most excited you were from the DNC. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Your calls and texts coming up next.
You are a rude, terrible person.
Everybody likes us. Everybody hates us. Think we'll go eat worms. Big fat, juicy ones. Teeny, weeny, squeeny ones. See how they wiggle and squirm. Cut off their heads and squeeze
out. I don't know about you all, but I think Jay Weber, Ann Coulter, Megyn Kelly, and a lot of them should just get served up a big old worm sandwich. I mean, it would seem appropriate. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're doing a DNC recap and then kicking off our brand new daily segment, Maggie and the Millionaires. You'll find that at the top of the hour. Your comments, reflections, and favorite moments, most shocking moments, most exciting moments of the DNC are welcome. I'd like to hear from you. So would Brian. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Before we go to the phones, I just wanted to finish sharing with you what I some really odd, shocking, cruel, stupid, insidious, bad ideas. Okay, you get the point. We're going to talk about rich people today. What makes people rich in the United States? What is rich? Again, that's going to start at 3 p.m. But one of the most poignant lines for me, the one that I will remember, that I will quote until the day that they put me underground, is that affirmative action is truly, actually, about generational wealth in this country and the passage of generational wealth so that, you know, your kids or your grandkids truly never have to work. They don't need a college education. They don't need any skills. They just do nothing for the rest of their lives or whatever they decide to do or not do, because you have amassed so much money that it exceeds all capital that you would need to live comfortably in this lifetime and is now transferring into future lifetimes, perhaps in perpetuity, so that you and all of your progeny never have to work again. I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like bootstraps. That sounds like lazy business. Not a good idea. Not a good idea. Let's take a listen to Michelle Obama talking about this very point. Then we're going to listen to what Rojo thinks it's like to be a billionaire, shall we?
She understands that most of us will never be afforded the grace of failing forward. We will never benefit from the affirmative action of generational wealth. If if we bankrupt a business, if we bankrupt a business or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. If things don't go our way, we don't have the luxury of whining or cheating others to get further ahead. No. We don't get to change the rules so we always win. If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top. No. We put our heads down. We get to work. In America, we do something.
And that's really the point, isn't it? Like, just speaking to what life is like for the vast majority of middle-class people is the point. Again, we don't get to fail forward. We don't get third, fourth, fifth chances. We don't get to screw up repeatedly and have people make excuses for us. This is the point. Middle class and working people in this country work damn hard. But, you know, let's just ask Ron Johnson, because I'm sure it's much harder for billionaires.
When I first got to Washington after having run a manufacturing plant for about 30 years, one of my first insights was how very few people in Washington, D.C., whether we're talking about the bureaucrats in the executive branch, staff members, or members of Congress, had any experience in, which means very little knowledge of, maybe even worse, very little sympathy for the private sector.
They can look you pause at it? Can you pause it right there, Brian?
No, it's very hard.
Can you pause it there? So he says very few people who work in government, bureaucrats, have any experience in and thus very little knowledge of what it's like to run a business. Dear Ron Johnson, do you have any experience in and therefore any knowledge of what a gallon of milk costs, what it means to try to buy groceries, fill a tank of gas, work three jobs, not because you want to, but because you have to feed your children? Dear Ron Johnson, do you have any experience of and therefore any knowledge of what it is like to not be able to send your child to whatever school you want because you cannot afford it? Ron Johnson, do you know, have any experience of, and therefore any knowledge of what it's like to worry about whether or not your kids will be better off? Do you know what public transportation is like, sir? What it's like to not have a driver or a private jet, or wait, three private jets? The arrogance of people like Ron Johnson is stunning. I would respectfully offer that the typical bureaucrat at any level of government who has been middle class, whose parents were middle class, and who will die middle class, has more knowledge of what it's like to exist in this economy than does Ron Johnson or any CEO. Running a business to make billions of dollars doesn't make you better qualified. That's just your experience, and you had choice. You could sell the business and stop doing that and probably live forever without working again. It is your choice, Ron Johnson, to engage in that business, to continue to be the CEO, to work to be a bill. Those are choices. But honestly, Ron, once you got $5 million, maybe $10 million, you name it, once you got all that in the bank, you don't have to work anymore. But let's listen to the rest of what he says, because it gets a little more interesting, because, you know, we should feel bad for billionaires because it's hard being rich. Let's listen to the rest of what Ron had to say.
They look at business, oh, it's easy to be a billionaire. No, it's very hard to run a successful business. It's difficult to think of a product somebody else wants to buy. It's even more difficult to produce that product or service at a cost less than you can sell it for. So business is hard.
Business is hard. Yep, all those things are true, but let's reflect, shall we? Didn't the auto industry get a bailout? Didn't big banks get a bailout? So actually, Ron, certain people get to fail forward all the time. Didn't Donald Trump go bankrupt 3 or 4 times, and yet he's still a billionaire? How do you screw contractors and say, well, it's real hard for me to not pay people?
How many times do you hear about a business going under or some giant corporation being screwed into the ground and the CEO gets, oh, a $10 million severance package? How nice of that. You cost them $200 million, but yet you get another $10 million to just go and do nothing for a while because you screwed up so bad.
For all the good work
and
you
that
did?
Person yeah, will get one.
Exactly.
I was the CEO of it. Oh, you were a CEO. Oh, we should hire you right away because your resume says CEO. Oh, it's fantastic. And it goes just back to exactly what you always, a theme that you bring up over and over again. Performance versus substance. Performance versus substance. If you happen to run a company and it does well, that's something you can do as a substance. But if you just happen to have a company because your dad has it, then that's performative. Unless you actually add some sort of, I don't know, substance to it later. Do something. Yeah. Americans, do something.
Because that's not fair. And someone who holds that perspective, oh, that it's hard to be a billionaire. It's hard because you have so much money that you have a harder time keeping track of it. Like, that's what's difficult about being a billionaire, for crying out loud. And here's one to complain. Megyn Kelly, in response to Oprah Winfrey's awesome speech at the DNC, tweeted this. Of course, Oprah had to mention the racism and misogyny she's faced from a country that made her world famous, a mega billionaire, and shown her enormous love and adoration. Megyn, don't you realize that both things are true? What
this
the hell is wrong
I think,
with
Rich,
you?
They released the lie about Beyonce allegedly showing up at the event last night. They wanted to boost ratings. That would be absolutely stupid.
No, that's all right.
If to say she's coming when you know she's not coming, if it didn't have a real purpose, something that helped you, right? That's just, why would you say like, we almost got her and we didn't, and just disappoint everybody? Trump's convention didn't do as well on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Obviously, Kamala had good ratings on Monday because it was Joe Biden. It was our sitting president and everybody wanted to see how he was.
Shut up,
and what
Megyn.
He would say. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, they had big stars of their party, the Obamas, Oprah, Bill Clinton. But I do wonder how the numbers will be for the sort of apples to apples, Kamala versus Trump, right? And I think the whole Beyonce's coming, she's not coming thing was a ruse to boost the ratings.
So Megyn, she's worked in media a long time. She knows that there are things called rumors. No one from the campaign that had any official knowledge ever said that. This was all rumors. And by the way, how dare you slam Oprah for pointing out that she faced racism and misogyny? Yes, she was able to succeed, but do Black people have to be freaking Oprah or Obama to simply live their lives without being harassed for their gender or their race or their sexual identity or whatever it may be that you and the MAGA cult decides isn't quite worthy enough? That's the point. And Megyn Kelly, by the way, remember how long her talk show was on NBC, Brian? It was like, I don't know, a month or two?
She guess did not what succeed.
Megyn, no. Guess what Megyn Kelly got to do? She got to fail forward. She got paid $69 million as a payoff for her failed talk show. $69 million, to your very point, Brian, for freaking it up. Shut up, Megyn. You don't get to say, oh, Oprah doesn't get to complain because she was subjected to racism and misogyny. I believe you might have also been subjected to a wee bit of harassment. I think that was you.
I believe that was
you
her.
You complained
with
about that?
Bleeding
yes.
from other places, bleeding from wherever, you know, who knows?
Gosh. All right, let's go to the phone lines and the text lines. Y'all are going to have a shot until the end of the top of the hour. At the end of the hour, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Wes from Middleton responding to the ridiculousness that is Jay Weber on WISN. Hey, Civic, don't forget to remind people that you can find some of your favorite sporting events across the Civic Media Radio Network and do not need to rely on WISN. Thanks so much for that. For example, Your Wisconsin Badgers 2024 football season kicks off on Friday, August 30th. Across several civic media stations. You can find them on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, RC in Richland Center, RJN in Racine, and of course WALK in Amory. Thanks for that, Wes from Middleton. Jeff from Shorewood pointing out that, frankly, the MAGA cult doesn't have a single policy or proposal about how to tax, frankly, rich individuals. They don't have any actual policy positions about reproductive freedom. It's a problem. Also, we've got Josh from Wausau. I loved how Donald Trump got all bent out of shape about President Obama making a little joke about him. But Trump makes those jokes all the time. We'll take more of your calls and texts when we come back. I'll get to all of you if you are on the line. Cindy, Jack, LA Tom, Mark, and CJ, I see you. We'll come back to the phones after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. Hey, put everybody, you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the DNC Recap. Coming back to you after these important messages.
Great big juicy ones, teeny weeny squeeny ones. See how they wiggle and squirm. Bite off their heads and suck out their juice and throw all their skins away. And nobody knows how I survive on worms three times a day.
Sunny, yesterday my life was filled with rain.
Welcome back, everybody.
You smiled at me and really eased the pain.
I'll tell you what I'm feeling sunny about on this extremely hot and humid Monday afternoon here in Wisconsin. I'm feeling sunny about the fact that 200,000 new volunteers during the DNC signed up for shifts. Not just like, oh, here's my name. Call me later about potentially maybe, I don't know if it fits in my schedule, doing something. But to Brian's point, to Michelle's point, to Oprah's point, to Kamala Harris's point, do something. 200,000 new volunteers have signed up for shifts to help Kamala Harris and Tim Walz become president and vice president of the United States. That is pretty impressive. Lynn from Oconomowoc saying, don't forget that the vice president shared that her mother never let them, her or her sister, do anything half-assed. Indeed, Lynn. She cried all the way through Governor Walz's acceptance speech. Every time she thinks about anything about Gus, oh, it was so joyful, pure, unfiltered, and proud. Julie from Mad Radio pointing out that I said November 5th. Oops. I believe, let me just triple check here. This is how fuzzy your brain gets, everybody. Let's see. It will be November 5th. November 5th is the election. It is Tuesday, November 5th. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, including me, when I get it wrong. Thanks, Julie. Jeff from Shorewood pointing out that Ron Johnson has a captive customer for his product. Yes, indeed, he does. Let's go to LA Tom. Haven't seen you on my call list in a while. How you doing, Tom? Welcome back.
Hey, Maggie. First off, I think this proves of the 200,000 volunteers that we, the people, ultimately are the government, and we are going to save our democracy and not let it go to Project 2025. Ron Johnson and all these other small business owners, I'm a small business owner. And you know what? I'm so happy to be a small business owner, and I hope I can give back to regular people through my taxes, because the truth is I don't like corporate America. I don't like working for corporate America. So all these people that cry up and cry about, oh, they're small business. First off, Ron Johnson, you're probably using ADP as your payroll situation. So you and your BS crap that you say about Mandela Barnes not being payroll, give me a freaking break. Second, didn't Ron Johnson marry in money? I think that's what happened there, if I remember correctly. And then also Paul Ryan, who benefits from his dad's Social Security. But here's my number one thing from the DNC that I actually loved, Maggie, was Bill Clinton, of all people, Bill Clinton, gets up there and says, since 1989, there were 51 million jobs created. 50 million were created by Democratic presidents. 1 million were created by Republican presidents. To me, that's a drop the mic deal. That's the thing we should be repeating over and over again, because Democrats are just better on the economy. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's you invest in infrastructure and you invest in things. It's all about getting a return on that investment. And Democrats get the return on investment.
Yeah, they sure do, Tom. Baseline. Every economist worth their salt will tell you infrastructure investments, investment in reskilling and upskilling, sometimes relocation for workers when the economy changes, right? We've gone largely from a manufacturing economy to a service economy. That sometimes requires governmental intervention, ensuring that workers are healthy, that they have childcare, that the air and water that they breathe is clean. This is what builds, sustains, and encourages economic growth. Helping small businesses afford healthcare for their employees through incentive programs or other tax relief for truly small businesses, that all makes really great economic sense, and it is part of the Democratic platform. Cindy from Appleton, favorite moments or comments this afternoon?
Well, the Republicans seem to have an issue with career politicians. I wish they had a bigger issue with millionaire and billionaire politicians.
100%, Cindy. This has always been my gripe. It's the origin of my attacks on people like Ron Johnson and Eric Hovde, because you have no idea what it's like to have, without any choice, without true choice, worry about how to make ends meet. You've never... Neither one of those gentlemen, I would venture to guess, has ever tried to, what I call, manage your credit, where you're running, you know, you've racked up expenses, you've had huge medical bills, you can't make both mortgage and a credit card payment, and your credit card creeps up, and it's at 25%. You've never dealt with that. You've never dealt with student loans whose payments take out half of your month net earnings after payroll tax.
Hold on. I blacked out after you said 25%. I'm like, what do you mean 25%? This is 25%. Yeah, it's funny, Maggie. You said 25%. Yeah. That's funny. I'm blacked out now.
Yes. Well, speaking of Eric Hovde and what a cruel person he is and how much he doesn't care about baseline reproductive freedom, without which women cannot fully participate in our political, cultural, or economic systems. Listen to what freaking Eric Hovde had to say during the DNC, mind you. Like, this is during the DNC on Newsmax about women voters. If you're a woman and a conservative, if you're a conservative that loves a woman, has a daughter, cares anything about women at all, here's what Eric Hovde has to say about the women that you love, and to every woman, conservative, liberal, independent, white, purple, polka-dotted, black, brown, whatever. Here's what Eric Hovde thinks about women.
Your opponent is a woman. You are running. You're running against her. The top of the Democrat ticket is a woman. Specifically, how do you message to get women to come over to the Republican side in this election?
Look, it's just not my way. I'm kind of like President Reagan. If I don't have something good to say about somebody, I just don't say it. I focus on the issues and hold her accountable for her record. So you're not going to see me name calling and all of that. I will be focused on what she has voted for, how she has hurt the people of Wisconsin, because her record is horrible and she has nothing to run on. She's a big do-nothing on top of it. So she is really accomplished very little for all her time in Congress and the Senate. So staying focused on her record and the issues that matter to the people of Wisconsin.
Just to summarize there, wannabe Senator Eric Hovde, you carpetbagger from California, you're a banker, you oppose reproductive freedom, and when asked, how do you appeal to women voters, your response is, if you don't have anything nice to say, then don't say anything. What the hell's wrong with you, man? We come back. We're going to start in with Maggie and the Millionaires. If I didn't get to your calls, I'll give you another crack at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
We got to do something.
Absolutely.
You know what we got to do? Talk.